Hey everyone, welcome to this episode of the Optimism Show. Today we have Heed from Webhash. And just a quick intro about Heed, he has built some amazing stuff, starting from a mobile backup startup in 2006 to Internet of Things in 13 different countries to literally a Web2 site with over 1 million users. And now he's moved into Web3. You were telling me some amazing things about the node network you are building. And I'm really excited to dive into those topics. But first, I just want to talk briefly about Webhash, because you really have a lot of experience. Like, you founded these different startups in different sectors, still in tech, but with solar. And then I know you have a website also with over 1 million users. So I'm really curious, like, how did all of that translate into building Webhash? Like, what did you really learn from all those things that right now you're putting into action to really kind of build like a protocol and a provenance network and all these exciting things that you're building in this space?
So Webhash, how Webhash started. Webhash was one W3 in 2023 when we started. Then we rebranded it to Webhash in 2024. So how Webhash started? So as everybody in Ethereum ecosystem, I too had a .eth domain. But when bear market hit, I was not confident. How can I use .eth other than having it on a Twitter handle? That is where the term hit me, ENS domain. It is not ENS name. It is ENS domain. So I was thinking, if it is a domain, you should be able to host a website on it. That is where that idea triggered to me. Instead of using only on my Twitter handle, why can't I use it and my LinkedIn bio on Twitter, like Linktree? That is where I started experimenting on it. It took more than 10 days to understand how can I host a website, IPFS, and all those research done. Then the idea hit me that I have a tech background from 2006. I took more than 10 days to understand everything. Think about the non-tech users. That is where I went to Dune and started doing some queries on Dune. Understood that there was more than 2.6 million ENS domains, but only 20,000 of them has a record added to it for website. It is called content hash. So only 20,000 of ENS names has a content hash. That is right. All the things which I was thinking, that so 2.6 million domains, majority of them are non-tech users who are investors, who are degens, who are using .eth as their Twitter handle. They don't know how to build a website on their ENS domain. My background, why I chose to build this, I have one more startup called w3layouts.com, which I started in 2012 as a hobby project because we had a lot of designs available with us. So we thought we should open source it and build a project around it where users can use those website designs to build their websites for free. So we started in 2012, and right now it has more than 1 million signed up user, niche web designers. Who is coming to the platform, downloading the designs and building websites for their clients or personal website and those stuff. So we have this enough background of how to build a tool which will help users to, non-tech users to build a website. And then we added these Web3 components to it where with a single click, these websites get compiled and hosted onto IPFS. And then we added a component where just with a click, you should be able to pay the gas fees and connect this IPFS content hash to the domain, where non-tech users will be struggling to understand how to add IPFS content hash.
I was going to say, like, honestly, one of the coolest things I find over there, like, is the idea where you are like, okay, let's make templates, like website templates into NFTs and connect it on that side as well.
Yeah. So because we wanted to create and create an ecosystem around Webhash, where you are a content creator. If you are a web designer, you can come to Webhash, build a cool website, then you can request us to convert into an NFT or a template. Okay, so our team will be converting it to a template. Then you can fix a price to that template. whoever wants to build website using that particular design, they can mint it and they can start building around it. Within a second, website will be ready. You just have to change the content. One of the community member called Millie.eth, she built one template. She built around two templates, which has minted more than 2,000 times on the platform. Means if she is giving it for free. If she has fixed a price to it, then $10 per mint, 2,000 mints, it will be a huge revenue for her. But it was an experiment. She was brave enough to venture into it, and she did the cool design, and it flied. So now we have more than 82 templates in platform. We are hoping by this weekend it will become 100 templates where all these NFTs are on base chain. Whoever wants to build a website in a second, they can just mint it and deploy it, change the content and publish it to IPFS, and it will become a permanent decentralized website on Web3 storages.
Yeah, that's actually a really interesting case, like looking at it and having spoken like with a lot of startups, like seeing it from a perspective of how you're engaging the creators literally within the platform is really interesting, and how you're building sort of a marketplace where everyone can benefit. And it's really plays on the aspects of decentralization on one end, but on the other hand, it could literally allow people to live off from making templates and to actually have an amazing time by promoting the platform and making templates while someone else is using those templates.
Yeah, in Web2, if you see, this is not permissionless. If you go to any platform in Web2 where creators go build web templates and publish onto their platforms, platforms will take 40% of the revenue and they will give 60% of the revenue to the creator. And that too, it's gated, like more than they will take more than a month to settle your payments. And lot of protocol, okay? When it comes to Web3, all these barriers will be removed. Like if someone mints an NFT, the revenue is directly settled onto the creator's wallet. They don't have to wait for us to do accounting, settle the payment and all the stuff. Just mint it in permissionless way, so it will be delivered to his wallet. And creator don't have to depend on us to do something. Everything happens in permissionless way.
And actually, taking a bit of a tangent here, which I think is another excellent feature, what you did with owning the websites, like really practically going really against, without going against hosting companies and allowing users to own the websites. And so they're never at risk of having the websites taken down. Like following up on that, I know you're building some amazing things with like the node network and what you mentioned with the layer tree and how you're connecting those things. Would love to hear more about that and dive more into detail over there. There might be some untapped opportunities for other projects in there.
Yes. See, when we started WebHash, our idea was to build a cool no-code website builder, just drag and drop, build it, publish it. We don't wanted to enter into infra business where we will be maintaining the nodes of IPFS and those stuff. So we partnered with multiple vendors who will be providing a service of IPFS storage. It's been 2 years we started this, and we consumed more than 400 GB of IPFS, users built more than 7,500 decentralized websites using WebHash. So over this time, we faced a lot of problems with these vendors. One vendor pivoting his startup idea into something else. So after AI came in, one of the vendor, they pivoted their entire product into AI-based tools. And over the night, they told us, we are not supporting IPFS from now. You have to find someone else. Then we moved to someone else where their problem is, when you publish a website, the website will not get discovered, because this website should be discovered because it's decentralized and those stuff. They have some weird settings in there which was not allowing us to make the websites live immediately. Users were getting irritated by this kind of a UX. Then we decided why don't we build our own decentralized network, which will be permissionless, not like a centralized company which will be maintaining these nodes. Once the centralized company shutdowns, all this content will disappear. So we have all these things in mind because of our own experience. We thought we should build a permissionless node network, storage node network, where the content will be hosted into multiple nodes, not on a single node, where the nodes will be discoverable always, which is not behind any kind of a firewall, which will not allow this content to be discovered with open networks. So we started our primary experiments. It was successful. Now we are inviting our community members to come join us on a testnet where we will be deploying these nodes and build a network where these nodes will be controlled through smart contracts instead of human intervention on controlling the nodes and making sure the storage is utilized properly and all the parameters of these nodes will be monitored through smart contracts and to make sure the node provider is incentivized in a right way. That is how we are building this. Not only storage network, we are looking at gateway network also, where access to the content should become decentralized. Right now, IPFS gateways, whichever are there in market, is controlled by some centralized companies. Okay, so if that company decides today to shut down that gateway, you'll lose access to those gateways. That is where we are looking into where we want to host a gateway node network where content can be accessed in a decentralized way instead of centralized way. So these both kind of node network we are building. Then coming back to ownership of a website which user built using WebHash, we have an interesting concept on that. Like every website which has been built can be tokenized. Okay, which will make life soon. Well, use cases are like you can have a multi signature based website building experience where, for example, if you are running a blog using WebHash, you will have an editor, you will have one content writer. Okay, content writer will write the content and ask for a signature from the editor. So it's a multi signature experience where once he writes and ask for the signature, then editor logins into the platform. He will proofread the content, and once he signs, then only the website will get published. This kind of experience. That's one of the use cases. The other use cases are like you want to build a business around these websites which you are building. You should be able to raise investments through these websites in a decentralized way. So fractionalize these websites and raise investments through crowdfunding and other kind of mechanisms, whichever you like, in a decentralized way.
I'm really curious on that point because I know like a lot of builders would be more than happy to explore that that direction. Like, have you so far noticed any interesting use cases of this particular thing that you're building, and how can people leverage it specifically to approach it in the first place?
Yeah, so what happens is when you click tokenize this website, okay, it will convert the website into ERC-721, okay? Yeah. So whoever holds this NFT in their wallet, they will have ownership over that website. So now think about use cases. You can list it in OpenSea and say that I'm selling my business for 50 ETH or 100 ETH or whatever price you want to fix it. And with buying that NFT, the other you're person will get business. Ownership of that website. Yeah,
you're literally buying a business from an NFT. It's the first time I hear of a use case like that, but it makes so much sense because it will make a lot of things much easier, especially for builders that might not have, like for smaller companies that might not be set up anywhere else or something similar like that. Like it makes life so much easier because you can still keep on doing what you're doing and keep on building without really having to worry about a lot of other things.
Yeah, best example is, for example, you have a media company where you are producing content like podcasts or videos or whichever content you are producing. So you have run this business for 5 years or 6 years and someone came to you and said that, okay, I want to take over your business. Are you willing to sell it? Okay, what is the best way to do that? You need an escrow account. You need lawyers between you and the buyer, and all this can be eliminated using decentralized technologies. That is what we are trying to achieve by tokenizing websites. So once you build it, you can tokenize it. Once it is tokenized, it will become an NFT where Blur or OpenSea or any ERC 721 supported NFT marketplaces can be used to sell or fractionalize it and raise investment. You don't have to sell the entire product. You can fractionalize it and raise some 10% of investment through fractionalizing this NFT. So all these use cases can be implemented. And I am excited once it goes live. I want to see what kind of use cases. You see, users are very creative. Okay, community is very creative. They will come up with crazy ideas. Okay, we have to see what happens when we...
No, that's actually how, like, even what you're saying, like, crazy ideas, and people will come up with crazy ideas when you give them the opportunity. Even, like, starting from the topic of, like, okay, you're building Webhash, which started off as a no-code drag-and-drop builder for Web3 websites. And now it's practically talking, like, the conversation goes towards, okay, tokenizing websites, and eventually even changing how businesses are bought and sold and how funds are raised. So it taps into so much opportunities that at first glance, they might not really seem completely connected to some people. But when diving into it, it makes perfect sense, like how these things are connected. That's amazing. And I'm really curious because you're also, as you said, you're also building something with nodes and the provenance chain, as you call it, and that there has been some conversations regarding that with some of the big players such as Adobe and similar. I'm really curious to hear it from your perspective. How can it really impact the creator economy and the media landscape? Because from my understanding, it can have quite a massive impact, especially now that AI is into play.
Yes. In the perspective of Webhash, what we are doing in provenance is the content, whatever content published to IPFS, there is no ownership defined for the content.
Yeah,
you will just get a content hash. You don't know who is the rightful owner of the content. That is where the idea came into existence, that we should, any content which has been published through Webhash storage protocol, that content should have ownership defined to it, means provenance attached to that content. You should be able to go on-chain, query that content hash. It should give you who is the owner of that content and when the content is published, what is the category, tax, if user is defining for that particular content. All these should be able to be proven on-chain. For example, take NFTs. Okay, the popular NFTs on OpenSea, you cannot track back and say that this particular JPEG image through IPFS is someone, this wallet is the rightful owner of that content. Nobody can prove that because IPFS doesn't have this feature natively. So that is where we started doing R&D on this, and we built smart contracts where if someone published a website using Webhash or some ecosystem product comes and builds something around it and start using our permissionless decentralized storage network and publishing content to IPFS, it will be triggering a smart contract function which will store the provenance of this particular content, saying that this wallet is the owner of this particular content, and from this particular platform this content has been published in at this time, and if some other provenance data a user wants to attach, it will be attached to it. When we are doing this, we figured out there are more problems in media ecosystem around provenance, like photos, images, AI-generated content. All this content can be proven on-chain if right tools has been built on it. So we are building on C2PA standards, which has been built by consortium of Adobe, Sony, and all these companies. Where C2PA standard is utilized for media content. That is where Hash Network comes into picture, where we have launched an L3 which is in testnet right now, where users can go generate an image using AI, and a provenance is attached to that content with C2PA, and the image can be proven that who has generated this image, when it was generated, is it an AI generated, or it is a real image which has been shot through a camera. So in future, we will be building SDKs where camera manufacturers can integrate those SDKs into their cameras. If someone click an image, that image will go on-chain with the web hash storage network, and a provenance will be, C2PA provenance will be attached to that image on-chain, where users can go and prove that, yeah, I am the rightful owner of this particular image by showing this provenance data attached to those images. So we have to capture this data at generation level itself. And a lot of questions coming around it. What about the historical images? How can I bring my historical image on chain and through that? So we are working around it and figuring out what are the legal complications will be there.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense. But on that side, like, historical images might be a bit difficult, because someone can just call it, okay, it's my image, well, it's not theirs. But on the other side, like, even how you explained that when it comes to the images, it can open up like a whole new thing, especially for people that leave off photography and leave off images, and that's what they do as a profession. Like, it can really make things much easier for them for a start. And on the other side, it, from my understanding, it will simplify the legal aspects a lot. Like, it will cut off a lot of bureaucracy that is not necessarily always the best approach to resolving things. Like, this is just, okay, you click and it's done. Which is probably the best way, like, thinking it from my perspective, is probably the best way to get people on chain without even knowing that they're necessarily on chain.
Yeah, that is the experience we need to build, where user doesn't have to understand it is Web3 or on chain or crypto or something. That is what we did with WebHash. You can log into WebHash with an email or a social account and start building. It will not, if you log in with your email, it will not ask you to mint the template. Okay. Yes. So we are minting the template for the user and dropping it to his virtual wallet, which is created through Privy. And tomorrow, if he wants to own that, if he wants to own that NFT, he can definitely do that with his generated wallet with email ID.
Yeah, that's an interesting use case of, like, really having a seamless experience, which I think a lot of Web3 companies don't have that seamless experience. So even if you're quite an advanced user, it's sometimes quite difficult to use some of these things. And it seems like what you're doing is optimizing for the user rather than optimizing for what's best for the system, because I bet it's a lot more complicated on your end to do something like that rather than just do the classic way where it's like 100 steps and you have to figure it out along the way. But I'm really curious on that perspective when it comes to the user experience, because you have one of the smoothest user experiences, I would say, probably in Web3. Like, what are your guiding principles over there, and what are you thinking in terms of user experience that allows you to create these seamless experiences? Like, how do you approach these challenges?
Yeah, see, I started my builder journey in 2006. You can say 2004 when I was in college. So I built multiple products. When I started, there was Android or iPhone. So we have come from wireless markup language was the only language which can be used to generate websites for mobiles. So I have seen through different technology which has been built by great people. So everybody says we need to onboard billion users onto Web3. How do you do that when the tech is complicated? That is my thought process, where we should make the experience seamless. Yes, for Web3 users, you can definitely ask them to pay the gas fees, do the signatures and all the stuff. Thanks to Privy, kind of a platform where you don't have to do all all those things. You can just ask user to log in through social or email or mobile, even mobile number. Okay, so then we improved our platform where we removed all these three terminologies, gas fees, signatures, and all those things for Web2 users. So we detect the user from where he's logging in, and we will remove all these hurdles, UX issues for the user, and he can seamlessly build it and publish the website without doing all these crypto Web3 related hurdles for Web2 users. I feel all the platforms should do something like this, where they should be able to onboard the users seamlessly. Who doesn't understand what is crypto, what is signatures, what is wallet? See, my nephew, he wanted to build a website from London. When there was a wallet connect button, he didn't understand what he has to do. Okay, so that is where I was worried. So I wanted to onboard him onto the platform. He's like a 10-year-old old kid. Okay, I want to onboard him, and he wanted to do a project using WebHash. Okay, so that is where we immediately integrated Privy and gave him access, and he did the project and submitted to his school. Okay, so we need to onboard 10-year kids onto Web3.
I think it's something that's most web founders in Web3 should hear about. Like, if your platform and what you're building cannot be used by a 10-year-old kid and you're going for like the masses, then maybe it's time to focus on onboarding your nephew first and figure it out for him, and then move for the rest.